بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه ثم أما بعد to proceed. So today, inshallah, we will go over the last part of the guidelines and benefits for the first maxim, first major maxim. Okay, just to make sure that I don't go over time. We're talking about the first major legal maxim, and which part of the book is this? Part one, part two, part three, part four. It's part two, because part one was the introductions, and we were done with the 10 introductions. And then part two are the major legal maxims and their branches. Part three will be the other legal maxims. Maybe we'll have to call them minor legal maxims. And then part four will be the guidelines. الضوابط يعني. الضوابط الفقهية. So الضوابط we will translate the ضوابط as regulators. They are little maxims, small maxims. Okay, so this is part two, and part two would be the five major legal maxims, the comprehensive major legal maxims. One of them is الأمور بمقاصدها, and this is the first one. And this has been, you know, for the vast majority of scholars, been the first one, الأمور بمقاصدها. And then what did we talk about before? The first thing we talked about was clarification. So clarification and other expressions. The second thing we talked about was justification or the evidence for the legal maxim. And the third is guidelines and benefits. And the benefits. And the fourth would be what? The branches. Okay? The branches. We'll start with the branches, you know, next session, inshallah. Guidelines and benefits, where we are. And we talked about which guidelines. We talked about the benefit of niyyah. So if we were talking about maqasid or niyyat, the first thing we talked about was the benefit of niyyah. The second thing would be the actions that don't require niyyah, not requiring niyyah. The third that we talked about was the conditions of validity of the niyyah. And we stayed there for quite some time because there are the positive conditions, the things that need to be there, and the negative conditions, the things that should not be there for the niyyah to be valid. Then what did we talk about? We talked about whether the niyyah is a condition itself or a pillar. Is it a shart or a rukn? We talked about this last time, right? And then we talked about mahal al-niyya, the place of the niyya, and whether utterance of the niyya is needed or not, whether you need to utter it or not. Remember last time we said that in udhiyya, in hajj and umrah and udhiyya, there may be some question there whether this is a niyya that is uttered or not, but you need to do the utterance anyway just to follow the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And then today, inshallah, we will finish the guidelines and the benefits. We have only two things to finish the guidelines and benefits. One of them is waqtu niyyah, aiming for the niyyah. And the other one is kayfiyyat niyyah. And that is the howness of the niyyah, or the basically the modality, or the howness, or how can you make a valid niyyah for each ibadah, for each act of worship. Okay, these are the two things that we will talk about today, inshallah. First, waqtu niyyah. That is timing for the intention. So when do you need to make the intention? You want to give zakat, you want to fast, you want to pray. When should you have the intention? This is not a small discussion. This is like, it may sound like, you know, so like, what's the big deal? You just make the niyyah. But when do you make the niyyah? So Imam Ahmad rahimahullah said in a narration from Hanbal, he said, أحب لكل من عمل عملا من صلاة أو صيام أو صدقة أو نوع من أنواع البر أن تكون النية متقدمة في ذلك قبل الفعل. قال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم, الأعمال بالنيات, فهذا يأتي على كل أمر من الأمور. فهذا يأتي على كل أمر من الأمور. That applies to everything. So I prefer for anyone who performs an act of worship, such as prayer, fasting, charity, or any type of good deed, that the intention precedes the act. You have to always be purposeful. Like your life has to be meaningful. You should have an niyyah. You should make sure that you're purposeful in every action. And then Imam Ahmad proceeded to say, the Prophet ﷺ said, actions are judged by intentions. Actions are judged by intentions. This applies to all matters. And that's the end of Imam Ahmad's statement. So, in Matalib Uli Nuha, the book that's called Matalib Uli Nuha, Matalib Uli Nuha was written by Rahibani. That's, you know, one of the latest, you know, great Hanbali scholars, Rahibani. He wrote the book Matalib Uli Nuha, which is a commentary on Ghayat al-Muntaha. It's a book written by Mar'i al-Karmi. These are all great imams. Rahibani was a 13th century scholar. Mar'i al-Karmi was an 11th century scholar. Mar'i al-Karmi died in 1033. Rahibani died in the middle of the 13th century, 1240 something. So they are separated by 200 years. So Mar'i al-Karmi wrote Ghayat al-Muntaha. Remember, Ghayat al-Muntaha does what? Brings what and what together? Brings al-Iqna' wal-Muntaha together. Brings al-Iqna' wal-Muntaha together. Okay, so that's Ghayat al-Muntaha. Ghayat al-Muntaha brings al-Iqna' wal-Muntaha together. And that is Mar'i al-Karmi. And then Ruhaybani came and wrote a commentary, which is called the Matalib Uli al-Nuha, people of intellect, Uli al-Nuha, people of intellect. So in this book, Matalib Uli al-Nuha, so Ruhaybani is not separated from us by too long, by the way. He's almost a contemporary scholar, like 200 years ago. So it's not like 700, 900, just 200 years ago, just yesterday. So in Matalib Uli al-Nuha, Imam al-Ruhaybani said, and it is regarding the Niyyah, he said, and its time is the beginning of the act or shortly before it. Its time is the beginning of the act or shortly before it, except fasting. So the intention for fasting is valid from the beginning of the night. The intention for fasting is valid from the beginning of the night. In Ghayat al-Muntaha, you know, that is the matne that Ruhaybani wrote the commentary on. It says, regarding the intention for ablution, Ghayat al-Muntaha is considered like a book, like a kitab. So in Ghayat al-Muntaha, regarding the intention for ablution, he said, it's invalid if it is advanced by a long time according to custom. If it is advanced by a long time according to custom. Why is he saying according to custom? Because مَا لَمْ يَحُدَّهُ الشَّرَعَ يُحَدُّ بِالْعُرْفِ. And this is a legal maxim. You will find it in Qawaad al-Nuraniyya by the Imam Ibn Taymiyyah, and certainly it's an agreed upon legal maxim, مَا لَمْ يَحُدَّهُ الشَّرْعَ يُحَدُّ بِالْعُرْفِ. That which is not qualified by the shara will be qualified by the urf, custom. So whenever they say not too long, not too short, so what is too long, what's too short? Certainly the Prophet ﷺ did not say 45 seconds. Then it will be the customary thing. And we will refer this back to custom. However, advancing it by a short time is acceptable, and it does not invalidate it if a small act is performed before commencing the worship. So if it is between the Niyyah and the beginning of the act of worship, all of this is important, because here at the beginning of the act of worship, all you know you have is the Niyyah in effect, not in reality. So it's not like you have to have the niyyah now when you're starting the act of worship, but you should not have interrupted, disrupted, terminated the niyyah when you start your worship. So the niyyah here will be effective by istishab, by continuity. It's, so since you just had the niyyah and you didn't interrupt it, you have it. Even though you may not be actively remembering the Niyyah at the beginning. So shortly before the act of worship would be fine. And even if you do something little, you know, between this and that, you know, you just walked into the masjid and then you went to put your shoes on the or something, you know, like a little action, not too much. A little act would not invalidate it if it separates between the niyyah and the beginning of the act of worship. Then in Kashaf al-Qina'ah, Kashaf al-Qina'ah is a commentary on which book? Al-Iqna'ah. Al-Iqna'ah is one of the two more important books that we talked about before. We said that we have Kashaf al-Iqna' and al-Muntaha. Al-Iqna' is written by Imam al-Hajjawi. Al-Muntaha is written by Imam Ibn al-Najjar. Okay. Al-Hajjawi died in 960, rahimahullah, and al-Najjar in 972. They were contemporary scholars. Each one of them wrote one of the two most important books according to the latter Hanbalis. We can't say these are the most important books in the history of the madhab, because these people are not more important than Ibn Qudama and his writings, or Al-Qadi Abu Ya'la and his writings, but the most important books according to the latter generations, Iqna' and Muntaha. Okay, so in Kashaf al-Qina'ah, and Kashaf al-Qina'ah is basically a commentary on Al-Iqna' that was written by Al-Buhuti. Al-Buhuti died in 1051, yeah. Buhuti died in 1051. So he was not, he was not separated from them by a very long time. He was not separated from Al-Hajjawi and Ibn al-Najjar by a very long time. So in Kashaf al-Qina'ah, it says here, it's permissible to advance it, the intention, meaning the intention, before purification by a short time, such as for prayer. The same applies to prayer, purification or prayer. Advance it, it's permissible to advance it by a short time. And zakat also. And it is not invalidated by a small act before the beginning. So now the exception. The exception is the intention for fasting. And the intention for fasting can be done, like if you have to do it right before, then you have to be awake right when the adhan starts. And right before, if the adhan is at 5:31, you have to make sure that you are awake at 5:30 to make your niyyah. Okay, so this would be a hardship. Therefore, the niyyah for fasting every day in Ramadan, we will come to how to make a niyyah for Ramadan. But the niyyah for fasting every day of Ramadan can be done anytime at night. How do you do it? If you just know that you're fasting tomorrow, that's the niyyah. If you know that you're fasting tomorrow, then that's the niyyah. But what if you go into coma the entire night? Or you are asleep the entire night? According to the madhab, and we will come to, you know, address this, you can't fast. That's not acceptable. You didn't have an niyyah. You can't have an niyyah when you're in coma or you're in sleep. Okay. So the intention for fasting is permitted to be made before dawn due to the difficulty in observing it. And the Prophet ﷺ said, لَا سِيَامَ لِمَنْ لَمْ يَفْرَدْهُ مِنَ اللَّيْلِ. There is no fasting for one who did not make it binding at night. From the, you know, مِنَ اللَّيْلِ, at night. So why is this discussion important? Because people were obsessing about this. People were obsessing about when to make the niyyah. Well, nowadays, people are relaxed about everything, so nobody's obsessing about anything. Not that obsession is a good thing. It's not a good thing. It's devastating. But, and then when you have someone obsessing about anything nowadays, you know that he has OCD. You know, it's not like extra piety, or, you know, most of the time. It's just like OCD. It's just like an illness that needs to be treated. You know, people in the past that were a little bit better than us, and when they were less knowledgeable, you know, it takes, you know, the type of wara'abid that is not knowledgeable, that's not alim, to befall themselves into all kinds of hardship, because they obsess about things and they don't know, you know, what's right. So, during the time of Imam Taymiyyah, rahimahullah, people would spend so much time to figure out how to make the niyyah, you know, even at the beginning of the salah. And they felt that the niyyah should be concurrent with the takbir. Concurrent with the takbir. So when you say Allahu Akbar, you have to have all the niyyah in your mind. You have to have all the niyyah in your mind. So let us see how he addresses this, and let us see, he gives a fatwa about this, but let us see how he addresses it, because it's really beautiful and it teaches you a lot about fiqh and about, you know, the right way to make fiqh. Even you find someone as oppositional to Imam Taymiyyah as Dr. Ali Jama'a, who was the ex-mufti of Egypt. He said that Imam Ibn Taymiyyah, and, you know, he calls him Imam sometimes when you know, he's in the right mood, and like, and then he bashes him other times and slanders him other times. It's just like, it varies, it depends. So he said that Imam Ibn Taymiyyah was one of the prominent figures who related divine rulings to people's daily lives and to people's actual life. And we will see how, you know, something like this would concern him, because it's causing hardship to the believers and it's preventing them from properly worshiping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Al-Ubudiyya, that's the name of one of his books, was his main concern, how to properly worship God, right servitude to God. So let's just dissect this fatwa, because if you look at the anatomy of this fatwa or architecture of this fatwa, it's really splendid. He said, regarding the niyyah and the fact that it does not have to be concurrent, to the takbir. So he says, we do not know of any disagreement in the madhab that it is permissible for the intention to precede takbir, and it suffices just to maintain its validity in effect. So we do not know of any disagreement in the madhab that the niyyah can precede the takbir. And it suffices to be concurrent with the takbir in effect, meaning what? You're not actively remembering it, but you did not terminate it. You just had the niyyah coming in to the prayer. You walked into the masjid, you pray dhuhr, you walked into the masjid to pray dhuhr, you had the niyyah, you didn't terminate it. It doesn't have to be concurrent with the takbir. So he says, no disagreement in the madhab. And that is the first thing that we will comment about. No disagreement in the madhab. That you could advance the niyyah. And so he then says, because it is part of the prayer, so it is permissible for the intention to be considered as having been continued in a legal sense, even if it is not actively remembered, just as with the other parts of the prayer. Okay, so this is the second part that we will comment about. Part of the prayer. So if you don't have, if you don't have to actively remember the niyyah, agreement within the madhab throughout the prayer, then the takbir also is part of the prayer. So if you have the niyyah from before, if the niyyah started here, and this is your takbir, this is your ruku'ah, this is your sujood, the niyyah started here, and we said that the niyyah continues in effect legally. You have the niyyah unless you terminate it, even if you're not actively remembering it. If we said that this is the case here in ruku'ah, and this is the case here in sujood, takbir is also part of the prayer. So what applies to ruku'ah and sujood should apply here as well. Then he says, this is also because requiring the intention to be concurrent with the takbir would be difficult and burdensome for many people and would open the door to waswas, to obsessions, leading them away from the purpose of prayer to unnecessary talk and idle chatter. Because they kept on trying to bring in the niyyah, bring in the niyyah, bring in the niyyah, and talk to each other, to talk to themselves to bring in the niyyah. So difficult and would lead to waswas, obsessions. Okay, then he says, this is also because the purpose of the intention is to distinguish one act from another, and this is achieved by the intention being either concurrent or advanced. So what's the purpose of the niyyah? When we talked about the benefits of the niyyah, is to distinguish ada from ibadah and to distinguish the ibadat from one another, to distinguish custom from worship and to distinguish the acts of worship from one another, to distinguish. And if you come in to pray dhuhr, and you this is your niyyah, you're walking into the masjid to pray dhuhr, you have distinguished this act even if you're not actively remembering the niyyah or bringing it into your heart concurrent with the takbir. Then he says, the known practice of the Prophet ﷺ and his companions was that they performed takbir with ease and simplicity, without undue complexity or hardship. If concurrence were obligatory, they would have needed to adopt that approach. They would have during the time of the Prophet, they would be like standing there at the beginning of the prayer, trying to figure out the niyyah and making all the commotion. So, prophetic practice. This is another argument. Then, okay. Then he says, moreover, the worshiper needs to intend the prayer and specify its type, time, and whether it is obligatory according to those who consider this. These intentions in the heart cannot be present at the very first letter of the takbir. So to be concurrent, you need to, because you don't have just one niyyah, because you have you have to sort out dhuhr from asr, you have to sort out ada from qada, whether this is, you know, the done on proper time or makeup. And certainly people would say like imam or ma'moom or this or that, and people will try to bring in, you know, so many other things, you know, mustaqbil al-qibla, facing qibla, and so on. So all of these things cannot be concurrent with each one of the letters of takbir. So they have to be spread out over the letters of takbir. Then you can't really, it's impossible. He's using this argument. What you're trying to achieve is impossible to achieve. To make all the nawaya concurrent with every letter of takbir is impossible. Impossible to achieve. Okay, then he says, if these intentions are, you know, he continues this same argument, if these intentions are spread over the letters of takbir, the beginning of takbir would lack the required intention, and the end would have only a part of the intention. It's clear that it is impossible for the considered intention to be simultaneous with takbir or part of its components. What's feasible to perform? What is feasible is to perform takbir following the valid intention. And then he finishes this by saying, and since takbir is meaningful speech, it's necessary to ponder it, conceptualize it, and understand it. So you're too busy making the niyyah, and you're forgetting that takbir itself requires reflection. Takbir itself needs your attention. Needs your attention. Takbir is huge. When you say Allah is greater, you have probably heard lectures by scholars talking about just the meanings packed into the takbir and what it means. So if you look at all of these arguments, you will find these are the arguments. So what are the basis for these arguments? One of the basis is textual or scriptural, and that's, you know, Hanbalism. And like if you're a Hanbali, you have to basically always include that. Where can you define this? Where can you find this? Prophetic practice is here. Okay. The other one would be the technical and fiqhi. And where can you find this? It's part of the prayer. So what applies to the other parts applies to it. Okay. And the distinguish. And this the distinguishes. Okay. And mashaqqat ajr bitaysir. It's difficult also. So, you know, he's including mashaqqat ajr bitaysir. So certainly technical can be many. But also, there, you know, where is the traditional part here? Where is the fact that he is not basically divorcing the tradition? He is saying, I am doing this within the tradition. It's here. There is no disagreement in the Hanbali madhab that the niyyah can precede the kabir. So, okay, so where is the part that is objective-oriented, objective-oriented, it is here. You're distracting yourself from takbir. Takbir is meaningful speech. You need to pay attention to takbir and the meanings of takbir. Where is the part that is rational? It's here. Impossible to achieve what you're trying to do. So just use your mind. It is impossible to make it concurrent with every letter of takbir. Use your mind. Where is practicable? Practicable. Practicable, and at the same time, concerned with the worshiper. It's like user-friendly, like concerned with the practitioner, you know. It's here, difficult and waswas. You're making your life difficult. You're pushing yourself into waswasa or obsessiveness. So I think that these are elements of fiqh that every faqih needs to be observing. It should be objective oriented, maqasidi. It should respect the text of revelation, certainly. Should respect the text of revelation. It should be rational, because, you know, to be Sunni does not mean that you are irrational. To be textualist or scripturalist does not mean that you must be irrational. You should be rational. And it should be practicable. Practicable. Because otherwise, if you give the people fatawa that will overwhelm them, exhaust them, impossible to apply, then that certainly can be devastating to their practice. Then it should be technically right, you know, it should be fiqh, like it should be a fiqhi argument. There should be a sound fiqhi argument. So you don't just say the maqasid say this or the maqasid say that. No, that's flimsy. You should make sure that the qawaid, the maxims, the principles of fiqh are not violated, because you should not create a conflict between the maqasid and the qawaid, between the objectives and the principles and maxims of fiqh. You should not either create a conflict between the maqasid and the text of revelation. And finally, it should be respectful of the tradition. So you're not basically doing it from scratch, disregarding or dismissing the entire tradition. So I thought that this was like a complete like fatwa. So when do we make the niyya? Before the act of worship, and as long as it's not too long before, and that's based on custom, it should be continued. In effect, the ruling of the niyya is continued, so you don't need to worry about, you know, this concurrence thing. And that applies to all acts of worship, except for fasting, because in fasting, it doesn't have to be right before the act of worship. It could be any time at night you make the niyya for the following day of Ramadan. And then we will talk a little bit more about how to make the niyya, how to make a proper niyya. Kayfiyat al-niyya al-mujzi'a, or the proper way of making valid intentions. So it says here, jurists expand on the discussion of the intention that suffices. Here we briefly outline some. As for wudu, niyya is required. Any intention of lifting the ritual impurity or permitting an action that requires ritual purity suffices. كُلُّ نِيَّةٍ لِرَفْعِهِ أَوْ اسْتِبَاحَةِ مَا يَحْتَاجِ إِلَى طَهَارَةٍ. Even if one intended renewal of wudu while forgetting his state of impurity, it is still lifted. Likewise, if one intended a recommended ghusl, it would still suffice for the obligatory ghusl in the stronger view. I'll read the whole thing about wudu and then we will dissect it. However, if one intended an undefined wudu or ghusl, his impurity would not be lifted. If one performs ghusl intending to remove the major impurity or perform an act permitted by its removal, The minor impurity would not be lifted. So this makes you dizzy, but here's what they're trying to say. In the Hanbali madhab, when it comes to wudu and ghusl, how do you make the niyya for wudu and ghusl? Let me give you the bottom line so that you're comfortable with whatever it is that you will be doing, and then we can get into the sort of the academic details. The bottom line is, whenever you make wudu and ghusl, make it with the intention of removing all hadath, ritual impurity. Make it of the intention of removing all hadath, or make it with the intention of permitting something that would require both types of purity, major and minor ritual purity. What would require both types of purity? Salah. You can't pray if you're missing the major and the and tawaf, and mas al mushaf, according to the jumhur, and many things. But just, when you make wudu or ghusl, make it with the intention that you're removing all ritual impurities, all ahdath, whether they're major or minor. So what is major? Post-menstruation, for instance, that's major ritual impurity. Janaba, sexual impurity, major ritual impurity. What is minor? Like having, use the bathroom and things of that nature that would break, nullify your wudu. That is minor ritual impurity. Now, when you make wudu or ghusl, just make your wudu and ghusl with the intent. And if you're going to make like a recommended ghusl, like a jum'ah ghusl or any recommended ghusl, just make it with the intention of recommended ghusl plus removing all ritual impurities. All ritual impurities. In this case, you will not need to make a separate wudu. In this case, you will not need to make a separate wudu because the ghusl will suffice for both ghusl and wudu. Having said that, here is the discussion. If one intended an undefined wudu or ghusl, his impurity would not be lifted. So he said that your impurity will be lifted with wudu and ghusl even if you do not intend to lift any impurity. Did he say that or not? He said if you forget that you have ritual impurity, and then you make a sunnah wudu, you're angry and you go make a sunnah wudu because you're angry. Will your ritual impurity be lifted? Keep in mind, you don't even remember that you have ritual impurity. You don't remember it. But you go make a sunnah wudu. Will your ritual impurity be lifted by this sunnah wudu? Yes. He says, yes, it will be lifted. Because you are making a ritual wudu, which is different from a habitual custom, like cleaning or something, wudu. But the mutlaq, the undefined wudu and ghusl, I'm not quite sure if you're making a ritual, like if this is for God, if this is the Islamic ritual wudu, you're just making a mutlaq wudu or ghusl. And people could even make this sometimes as a habit, not necessarily for any particular religious reason. Then if you're making it mutlaq undefined, it will not count and you will not have wudu or ghusl. If one intended an undefined wudu or ghusl, his impurity would not be lifted. The same applies to, so they're very flexible. If you're making anything that is ritual, recommended, and you have in mind that I am making sort of the, whether it's the obligatory or recommended, whether I am making it to remove the impurity or to permit the acts, certain acts. So make the wudu and ghusl to remove your impurities or تستبيح بعض الأفعال or to make permissible for yourself certain acts that are not permitted without ritual purity. Combine the niyas if you're able to, but either one would be sufficient. Keep in mind though, if you make a niyya, like you're going to make ghusl, and you make a niyya not to remove all ritual impurities, but you make a niyya, I'm going to make ghusl because I want to sit in the masjid, because I want to read Quran. Sitting in the masjid and reading Quran require wudu? No. In this case, your ghusl will not suffice for wudu, because you made a ghusl to sit in the masjid or to read Quran. Unlike making ghusl to touch the mushaf, because according to the Hanbalis, and in fact the former Dhahab, it's a controversial issue whether you need to have wudu to touch the mushaf or not. Most of the time you guys use in your iPhone nowadays and your smartphones and stuff like that, so that's not required for that. However, the mushaf itself, the former Dhahab said that you need to have wudu to touch it. In this case, you go make ghusl with the intent of reading Quran. Does that remove your minor ritual impurity? No. You go make ghusl with the intent of touching the mushaf. Does that remove your minor ritual impurity? Yes. What is the difference? Because you have intended to make ghusl to permit an act that is only permissible with wudu, with both types of purity, major and minor ritual purity. Make it easy for yourself. Every time you make wudu or ghusl, you just make sure. And let's keep the questions until the end, because it will, but I will give some time for at the end for clarifications. But make the wudu and ghusl, make your wudu and ghusl with the intent of removing all the ritual impurities that can be removed, you know. So of course, if you're making wudu, you can't remove your sexual impurity just simply by wudu. But with the intent of removing all the ritual impurities that can be removed by this act, you'll be fine. Now, so you're making, so salah and tawaf and things of that nature, these require the two purities, right? Salah, tawaf, mas al mushaf, these require the two purities, the major and the minor. Qira'at al-Qur'an, sitting in the masjid, these things require one purity. Also, you know, post-menstrual, you know, to basically make a ghusl after the end of the period simply to permit marital relationships, this will not do you, you know, much good when it comes to wudu. You need to make wudu, because you don't have to have wudu to have, you know, a sexual relationship, a marital sort of intimacy. Therefore, if you're done with your period and you make ghusl just to permit that, that doesn't replace wudu. You have to make wudu. But if you do it with the intent of removing all impurities, it will suffice. It will suffice. And if you want to add to it some sunnah ghusl as well, that will work. It will work. It will be fine. Now, as for tayammum is a little bit different. As for tayammum, it's a little bit different. So, does one need to intend to permit the actions, certain actions, or lift the impurity? So in the madhab, there is this agreement. There is this agreement. And as I said, you know, And this is unorthodox, but I don't feel that people should be, you know, unorthodox. I'm not, you know, my God is Allah, not orthodoxy. But a little bit unorthodox in the sense that people will say that you have to follow the sort of the mu'tamad or the authorized position in the madhab. Sometimes these authorized position may be in conflict with the rest of the madhab. In every madhab, there are certain things. So if there is a disagreement between the scholars and it's not clear to you, it's not clear in your heart that this is what Allah and His Messenger want, then you can take whichever opinion you want in your personal practice. That is my belief. I can defend it, you know, from here until next year. But it is not, it's not popular nowadays, because nowadays people want to be, you know, defending orthodoxy. As if these scholars who said those views that are not mu'tamad were sort of like a bunch of hippies or something. Anyway, so as for tayammum, does one need to intend to permit the acts or to lift the impurity? No, one needs to, in the madhab, in the authorized view. There is a difference between like an academic discussion. We certainly would not make the authorized unauthorized and the unauthorized authorized. You would have to say, this is the mu'tamad, this is the authorized view, preponderant, dominant view, popular view within the madhab. So the popular view within the madhab is that when you make an intention for tayammum, it has to be what? To permit the act, not to lift the impurity. التيمم رافع أو مبيح. رافع أو مبيح. مبيح in the madhab. Not رافع. رافع means it's the adjective from يرفع to lift. Lifter. Does it lift? Or مبيح. Permitter. Does it permit or lift? Lift your impurity or just simply permit you to pray? Hasn't lifted your impurity. It simply permitted you to so, you know, so when if you say mubih, it will be a very unstable type of purity or permission that can end by so many things. But this is the madhab. In the madhab, there is a position that tayammum is rafa, which means it lifts your impurity. It is a substitute for wudu. It acts like wudu. It lifts your impurity. If it is a substitute for ghusl, it acts like ghusl. It lifts your impurity. Okay. Then, what about the prayer? It is stipulated that specific prayer be designated, which is the opinion of the vast majority of scholars concerning every obligatory act with a flexible time. However, it is also said that it suffices to intend the obligation of the time. You're coming in to pray dhuhr, and you came into the masjid, they made takbir, you want to catch the takbir with the imam, and then you can't remember if you're here to pray dhuhr or asr, or if this is, you know, what is it? Is it time for dhuhr, time for asr, what is it? Should you rush to make the takbir to catch it with the imam, or take your time to make a decisive designation of which salah you're making? Take your time. You have to remember which salah. You have to sort out dhuhr and asr. In the mu'tamad, is there another position that you could intend the obligation of the time? Yes. But here, honestly speaking, the mu'tamad is much stronger because there is a difference between dhuhr and asr. Dhuhr and asr are distinct acts of worship. Distinct acts of worship. So in this case, you want to take your time to remember what you are doing. Also, if you forget, like you miss dhuhr or asr, and you forget which one you missed, can you just make as Allah, a makeup for whatever it is that you had missed, or you need to remember. You need to remember. Or you pray separately for each one. So in this case, designation, ta'yin, is important. Ta'yin is important. Because salah, he says here, this applies. He says here, the opinion of the vast majority of scholars concerning every obligatory act with a flexible time. Flexible time in the istilah is wajib muwassa versus mudayyak. What is the difference between this? Flexible time. What is this? Restricted time. What's an example on this? Prayer. Because what is the difference between wajib and muwassa? Flexible. You could perform several of the same act during this time. So how many dhuhrs could you pray between dhuhr and asr? 200 dhuhrs. How many days of Ramadan can you fast between fajr and maghrib? Only one. So this is wajib mudayyak. It can only take that ibadah here, you know. Okay. So we will come to address this shortly. As for zakah, he says, so the salah, you need to designate it. As for zakah, there is no requirement to specify the wealth. One may intend it for the absent wealth while intending that if it were destroyed, it would apply to the present wealth or be a voluntary charity. You have a property, zakatable property, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. Inshallah, you will have that. But you have property there that's zakatable. You're here. You're not sure whether this property is still there or not. You could make an intention that I am paying zakat on this property. This is my zakat on this property. If it was not present at the time the zakat was due, was destroyed, was lost, the money was whatever, you know, then the zakat I am paying now will go towards this present property that I have in Massachusetts. I'm sure, you know, I know that I have it. I know, I'm sure I have it. So it will go towards this. And if not, it will go towards the property that I have in Massachusetts. Does that work? Works. It works in the madhab. It doesn't have to be designated. Even if you say that this will be for the property in the DRC, and if there is a country called DRC, right? Okay, I'm just not making this up, because Asaballah looks like he doesn't believe it. Yeah. So if there is, okay. So if the property there is non-existent, it will be enough for me. It will be charity for me, like a sort of a recommended charity, sunnah charity. Not okay. Does it work? It's a little bit more difficult here, and there's more disagreement within the madhab here. There is disagreement on both, but there is more disagreement within the madhab here. Why is this? Why there is more disagreement in the madhab here? Because of this reluctance between wajib and nafl. Because now you're paying zakat with the intention that it is for the wajib, but if the wajib is not existent, it is nafl. Okay? If you pay zakat with combined intentions, do you remember this? When we said when you combine two intentions, sometimes they usually want to validate one. So if you combine the intention of obligatory and sunnah hajj, which one they will validate for you? Hajj, the fard. Because, you know, like if you came from Indonesia just to do this, they just want to be merciful to you. If you combine wajib and sunnah prayers, which one they validate for you? None. If you combine wajib and sunnah charity, which one they validate for you? Sunnah. Is this different from this case? Yes, it is different. You're not combining intentions here. This is an alternation. You're saying, this is my zakat for this property. If it were destroyed, or if it was destroyed before the zakat due date, then it will go towards sort of sunnah, you know, or charity, mutlaq charity. Okay. So that's fine. So that's as far as zakat is concerned. As far as fasting is concerned, intention is obligatory for every night. However, some say a single intention at the beginning of the month suffices. The intention must be specified during the night. So two issues here. Is the intention required for the entire month of Ramadan once? Ramadan, intend at the beginning. At beginning, if you were with us if in Umda, it would look like this. What does this say? A report in the Hanbali Madhab and the Maliki and the authorized view in the Maliki Madhab. You need one intention in the beginning of the month of Ramadan to act for all of Ramadan. Okay. Now, the authorized view in the Hanbali Madhab is that you need an intention for every night. The second issue is you need to designate the intention at night. At night. If you're in coma or you're like asleep, your fasting is not accepted. You need to. Others hold that specification is not required in Ramadan because it is an obligatory fast with a restricted time. Restricted time versus what? Flexible time. This is mudayyak. The other one is muassa. Mudayyak means what? You can't do more than one act of worship during this time of the same nature. Just, yeah. Okay. So they are saying that you don't need to specify the restricted time. So whatever it is that you intend, it will go towards Ramadan. Distinguished by its specific period. Therefore, if one intends general fasting, it's considered for Ramadan. Indeed, some say that even if one intended makeup or voluntary one, it would be considered for Ramadan, and the mistake would not harm him. This is also the view of the Hanafi school, who argue that specifying what's already specified is redundant. So, this would look like what now? What are they saying? No need for specification. You don't need to specify that you're fasting, you know, the fast of Ramadan. This is Ramadan. You know, it's redundant. So that's what they're saying. So what does A and the majority say? You need to specify that this is for Ramadan. Some scholars took a middle position. Al-Majd, which is the grandfather of, you know, the Hafid, Ibn Taymiyyah al-Hafid and Ibn Taymiyyah al-Jadd, you know, so Ibn Taymiyyah al-Jadd or Ibn Taymiyyah the grandfather, who's less popular than the grandson, but was a major, major Hanbali scholar, so sort of on the same footing like Ibn Qudama, although Ibn Qudama is a little bit, you know, greater. But in Al-Majd, in his book Al-Muharrar, and this is an important book also, like a very important book. So we said that every book that came after Al-Muqna somehow related to Al-Muqna. So you have like Al-Iqna, for instance, by Al-Hajjawi, of course, relating to Al-Muqna, but benefited from Al-Muharrar, benefited from Al-Mustawa'ib by Samurri, benefited from Al-Furu' by Ibn Muflih, and so on. So Al-Muharrar is a major book written by the Ibn Taymiyyah the grandfather of the popular one, and he said, he took a middle position. He said, if you intend a voluntary fast or a vow or this or that, it will not count. But if you intend a general fasting, it would count towards Ramadan. Because he said, I can't make it count for you if you intended the opposite. But if you left it general, I would count it for you. If you left it general, I would count it for you. And the grandson in this case said, this is good enough for al-jahil, not al-alim. The jahil, if you leave it, it will count for you. It will default to Ramadan. But for the alim, you need to make the designation. Okay. Now, finally, the intention in Hajj. Finally, the last point. The intention in Hajj is ihram, which is the intention to enter into the state of ritual consecration or the pilgrimage. It does not require to specify the type of nusuk at the time of ihram. Later designate it, you can later designate it. But you have to designate it before you perform any acts of Hajj and Umrah. And then he says, a guardian may assume the ihram on behalf of someone who's not discerning. So Hajj and Umrah. Now it's time to make Hajj. Your wife is at the other end of the plane, or your husband, or your companion, and you don't know if they're making Ifrad or they're making Quran or what is it that they're making, and it's time to make your ihram because you're crossing the miqat. Just make your ihram. Don't specify. Don't designate a particular nusuk. But just make your ihram. An unqualified ihram would count. But certainly, before you start anything, any sort of rituals, you need to specify which nusuk you're in. Are you in ifrad, hajj only, qiran, hajj combined with umrah, or tamattu, umrah, followed by hajj, separated by tahallul? Then, in this case, just do it this way. Do a mutlaq ihram, and then designate it later. He says that a person can make ihram, assume ihram on behalf of their non-discerning child. Of course they can. Even if they did not make hajj themselves, even if they didn't make hajj themselves. Okay. Now we come to the end of this, and we will come back at 9:15, inshallah, for if anyone needed clarification, let's just, what do you guys think? Who's the, Ahmed, what do you think? It's okay? Okay, if anyone needed to ask clarification, yes. Yeah. So he's doing ghusl to touch the mushaf. If he does ghusl to touch the mushaf, it will count for wudu as well. But if he's making ghusl, it will count as ghusl, and it will remove both minor and major ritual impurities. Ghusl is different from wudu. No, he's not. He's not. If he is making a ghusl to remove both types of ritual impurities, they will be removed, irrespective of his state. Yes. Has that? But I don't find it in the Mu'tamad of the Mazhab. There is, if you make a ghusl to remove your major and minor impurities, it will be removed. Yes, it will remove both, major and minor. Yeah. I recognize that fatwa. It's just not the Mu'tamad. I don't find it. I don't find where it comes from. Like, yeah. I'm not sure, but like, I'm not sure about Al-Qudori because it's a Hanafi book, but in the Mu'tamad of the Hanbali Madhab, it will suffice if you intend it for both. No, that's different in the Hanbali Madhab. You have to have the intention of ghusl in the Hanbali Madhab, and you also have to rinse your mouth. And even in the Hanafis, they require for ghusl in particular, they don't require it for wudu, but they require it for ghusl to rinse your mouth and nostrils. But in the Hanbali Madhab, you will have to have the intention for both types of purity. An intention is required for both types of purity. No, they both can go into nafl, but you can't combine in salah the two together at the same time. But you can downgrade the salah from fard to nafl. We said you cannot upgrade, but you can upgrade. You can't move sideways. You can't switch it from Dhuhr to Asr or Asr to Dhuhr. You cannot go up from Nafl to Dhuhr. You can go down from Fard to Nafl. Sisters, for clarification only, because we're coming back to... Yes, go ahead. Oh, that... No, you could... You could downgrade your prayer inside the prayer from fard to nafl. If you're making dhuhr, you could go down to nafl, to a sunnah prayer. You cannot do the opposite. You can't go up, you can go down. You can't move sideways. You cannot switch from Dhuhr to Asr or Asr to Dhuhr because that's at the same level. You can't move sideways. You can only move down. You can't move up. You can't move sideways. You can only move down. Yes. Yes, that's the appropriate thing to do. If you got into the wrong prayer, just get out and restart. Yes. If you have to make the asr, okay, repeat that. No, that will be too long, because like if you're coming to Masjid Walay from Brooklyn, for instance, it's like, no. Okay, customary is a tricky thing, you know, but like let's say Sheikh Ala Al-Sadawi, who lives right here next to the Masjid, you know, and walks over to Masjid Al-Walay to pray Dhuhr. I think I think that would count, because he, you know, he's just right there. So it needs to be, you know, shortly before, very shortly before. Yeah. Yes. Repeat. No. Your wudu is valid. Your wudu is not broken by this hesitation. Your salah is broken by hesitation, but your wudu is not. Intended to end his wudu by using the bathroom and he didn't do it, it doesn't break. Your wudu is valid until you actually break it. So hesitation about the wudu is not like hesitation about the salah or fasting. Because wudu min ibadat al-wasa'il, it's basically an act of worship needed for another one, not for itself. All right, so we will come back then at 9:30.